Thanks so much for joining us on Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. It comes your way each and every Saturday at noon. Thanks so much for joining us. Tom Schroyer is our host on the program. Tom is out today. He'll be joining us on the program in a couple of weeks. Next week, we have a best of program on the 4th of July. And before we say goodbye today, we'll tell you more about that. Once again, best of Minnesota Law coming up next Saturday, the 4th of July. Joining us in studio, Matt Kostelnik is joining us. And Matt, second time in studio with us now?
Second time. Thanks for having me back, Steve.
Matt is from Moss & Barnett's Litigation Practice Group, and today we're talking trade secrets, how to protect them, and what to do if they are disclosed. And I think, Matt, there's a couple of things that come to mind when you think trade secrets. I always think of two: Coca-Cola and Kentucky Fried Chicken. They may be two of the more famous trade secrets out there.
Absolutely. Those two examples that you just provided are the classic examples of what a trade secret is. Nobody except Coca-Cola executives know what the formula is for Coca-Cola. They keep it a closely guarded secret, as they must to qualify for trade secret protection. The recipe is known by only a few key employees, and the effort that goes into maintaining secrecy is paramount. Similarly, Kentucky Fried Chicken is also a terrific example of what can be a trade secret. The Colonel Sanders handwritten recipe of 11 herbs and spices is a closely guarded secret at Kentucky Fried Chicken headquarters. In fact, as I was preparing for the show, we came across an article about the efforts that KFC made when they were trying to improve their security. And reading the article, one of the things they mentioned was that they keep this trade secret in a vault behind a door with three locks on it. Wow. In a file cabinet that requires, again, a combination lock to be undone in order to get at the trade secret. In addition, there are two executives who know of the existence of the secret or what the secret recipe is, but their identities are not disclosed to the general public, again, in an effort by the company to safeguard the information, as they must to qualify for trade secret protection.
Now, Matt, the recipe, if you will, for Coca-Cola or Kentucky Fried Chicken, easy to understand. It's a recipe. It's a written document. They've done extraordinary things to keep it a secret. But in this modern era of electronics and software and all sorts of things, has it become more complicated to determine what is a trade secret, and how do we define that here in 2009?
I think you raise a couple of important points in your question. Let's talk specifically about electronically stored information and its transferability. To the extent that we have more and more company confidential information being maintained on computers and being transferred via email, the likelihood of disclosure increases all the more. And so as a result, it does become more complicated to maintain trade secret protection by virtue of the fact that this information can be disclosed simply by clicking on a mouse or being presented at a seminar and PowerPoint with an employee who's not quite aware of what should and should not be presented to the general public. Another point raised by your question with respect to technology is this. One of the important differences between trade secret protection and patent protection, for example, is that trade secret protection derives or is something which is protected by virtue of the fact that it is not well known. Contrast that with patent law. Patent law requires a disclosure, and in exchange for the disclosure, you're granted a period of protection of 20 years. Now, I'm going the reason why this is important is with respect to technology, one of the key exceptions to trade secret protection is if something can be legitimately reverse engineered. And by that, I mean if somebody could take the time and run the Coca-Cola or the KFC or you name it through a machine and try to ascertain exactly what's into it, and they did it legitimately. That is, they came to that conclusion without any misappropriation of trade secret or any wrongdoing. They could well, in fact, compete in the marketplace using that flavor, if you will, with respect to what we're talking about. And so it does become more difficult to maintain secrecy in that we probably have greater technology available to reverse engineer and get around the protection.
So back to the KFC example, the fact that it doesn't exist in the electronic universe is probably a good thing, that it's on a sheet of paper in that vault, if you will, at company headquarters. That probably is a huge benefit, that it's not written down somewhere else or it doesn't exist on a CD-ROM somewhere.
Oh, most definitely. To the extent that you have one copy, you're doing yourself a favor because that's only one copy that needs to be guarded. As we get into electronically stored information that can be easily duplicated, it becomes that much more of a concern for the employer, and the difficulty increases exponentially in terms of maintaining secrecy.
So beyond that, you know, we've got the formula for Coke, the formula for KFC, and other things. Is it difficult at times to determine what is a trade secret and what isn't?
It is and it's not. It's a good question in that the statute itself, and I guess we could do a brief segue into the source of trade secret protection, which under Minnesota law is by statute. And the statute in Minnesota, you can go to the book, you can open up the statute book, and you'll find the definition for trade secret. And a trade secret is defined as information which derives value by virtue of the fact that it is not well known or readily ascertainable by others. And the statute does give examples of the types of information that could qualify as a trade secret. They talk about a process or a compilation or a formula. But in reality, it does become which obviously are broad categories, but for the lawyer examining the case, representing a client who's trying to obtain trade secret protection, you're going to argue that whatever piece of information we're talking about falls under the statute if you can do so in good faith. Similarly, a party defending against such an action is going to make the contrary arguments. And to the extent that you can qualify as a trade secret because it's not well known or readily ascertainable by others, hasn't been disclosed, derives some value for the business because it's a secret. In other words, if it was disclosed in the marketplace, other competitors would use it and the value would be depleted. To the extent that you can satisfy those elements of the statute, you're going to qualify for trade secret protection.
It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett here on News Radio 830-WCCO. And by the way, if you have a question about trade secrets, feel free to give the program a call. Matt Kostelnik is in studio. Phone number on the program, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett here on News Radio 830-WCCO. Thanks so much for joining us on Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, available online at moss-barnett.com. You can hear copies of the program online at moss-barnett.com. They're all archived there. You can also hear it online at our website, 830-WCCO.com. Matt Kostelnik joining us in studio today. Trade secrets in the spotlight. What are they? What can be protected? What do you do if you think one of your trade secrets has been leaked? That's all coming up on the show. Your calls always welcome, 651-989-9226 or toll-free 1-866-989-9226 is the phone number. You can text the studio as well. Easy to do. Send your text to 81807. That's 81807. Let's go to the phone. Dave, you're on the air. Hi, Dave.
Hi there. How are you?
Great, Dave.
My question is, I work for a software company. I'm curious how trade secret law either relates to or doesn't relate to intellectual property law.
All right, very good.
That's a good question. Thank you for the call. Trade secret protection is really a subset of what could be generally considered intellectual property law classification. Within intellectual property law, we're talking about copyright, trademark, patent, and trade secret. And as I mentioned earlier, one of the important distinctions is whether or not the information must be disclosed to obtain protection, i.e. what we're going to see in patent or copyright or trademark, or whether the information must be maintained as secret information as it would be with a trade secret. You mentioned software. Software is something that the source code for software, for example, would be something that a company would keep secret but could be reverse engineered. And if it's legitimately reverse engineered, it may fall outside the realm of trade secret protection because now it has been disclosed in the general public. And so generally speaking, in terms of trade secret law, it's a subset of intellectual property law.
Reverse engineering. So if I want to go home and go to work and recreate the formula for Coca-Cola in my kitchen or Kentucky Fried Chicken, I could do that. But I suppose I need some sort of documentation and some sort of legal help to make sure I don't get in trouble when my new product is unveiled.
Well, it's a great question. The reality is that to the extent that we're talking about a completely independent third person attempting to reverse engineer a trade secret in their garage, you're probably not going to face any liability for doing something like that. In fact, it would be expected because we compete in the marketplace. In actuality, what we see in practice, Steve, is that someone who's an insider, somebody with knowledge, is attempting this reverse engineering. And depending upon the circumstances, you may find that somebody has knowledge, the keys to the castle, that the information which was supposed to be kept secret, which has been leaked or misappropriated, and is now being used by someone to compete unfairly in the marketplace. And that is the type of situation that the trade secret law was intended to prevent against. That is the type of situation that employers will try to prevent against by maintaining confidentiality of their data, having certain employees enter into employment agreements, and otherwise enforcing policies and containing certain statements in employment manuals and so forth about the secrecy of certain information.
It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, Matt Kostelnik in studio. Trade secrets in the spotlight today. We have the news and weather coming up and much more on the program today. Minnesota Law comes your way. Saturdays at noon, we go to Chris in Eagan. Chris, you're on the air. Hello.
Well, first of all, this is a fascinating topic. I appreciate you guys talking about it. This is the second time I've had a chance to catch the show, and it happens, Matt, that you've been on it twice. So, awesome. Very good topic. I guess my question is, you know, are there any trends in judicial interpretation of these statutes and in light of the electronic media, and is there a movement to update the statutes, and how do you deal with the topic that really crosses not just state borders but national and international borders?
It's a great question. Thank you for listening to the show. What we're seeing as far as trends, and I'll speak to a couple. First, what we're seeing as lawyers in civil litigation is an uptick in trade secret litigation, and we think that's caused directly by what we're seeing in the economy. And not only here in the Twin Cities area, but when I speak with lawyers in other states, they are also seeing an uptick in this type of litigation. And it is typically occurring in the context of employment separations. And as you might imagine, in our economic climate, we're seeing more and more employment separations, whether they be voluntary or involuntary, a layoff or a termination. But in those situations, the potential for trade secrets and confidential information to walk out the door increases. Similarly, because the economic times have befallen a number of industries or have caused a number of industries to fall on hard times, what we're seeing is that whereas in good times, a company may be willing to not start a lawsuit, not commence civil litigation, perhaps is willing to let it go, if you will, all of a sudden now it becomes a bet the company proposition. And so we're seeing an uptick in the litigation for that reason. Now, you had spoken specifically about electronic media. I am not aware of a trend with respect to electronic media in terms of updating the statute. What I will tell you is that the trade secret statute, which Minnesota has adopted, Minnesota is one of 46 states which have adopted a similar trade secret statute. That's because trade secret law under Minnesota law is based upon the Uniform Trade Secret Act, which has been adopted by 46 states. And so to the extent Minnesota wants to make a change, it's free to do so. However, that change is probably going to be looked at by the National Conference of the law scholars, if you will, who look at these uniform laws and make changes appropriately to adapt to certain scenarios and situations.
We have much more on the way. It's Trade and Secrets in the Spotlight on Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Matt Kostelnik in the studio today. We'll take your calls. We'll take your texts coming up. Also, Trade Secrets and the Breathalyzer? Yes, that's coming up following the news and weather. Here on News Radio, 830 WCCO. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Tom Schroer, our host off today. I'm Steve Thompson. Dennis Matuzak is our studio coordinator. Matt Kostelnik is joining us from Moss and Barnett in the spotlight, Trade Secrets. And before the news and weather break, we talked about the intoxilizer or breathalyzer device that is involved in a trade secret battle of sorts.
That's right. The intoxilizer has been the subject of efforts by the Criminal Defense Bar here in Minnesota to make the source code available to defendants in defending against lawsuits for DUI or DWI. And so far, and they've gone back and forth in the courts through the district court, appellate court. Well, recently the Supreme Court agreed that the state must disclose the source code. The only problem is that the prosecutors who are prosecuting these cases don't have it. In actuality, that source code resides with the Kentucky company who owns the rights to it, and so far that company has refused to release it. So what we have is an order from the Minnesota court that the information must be disclosed, the state saying we don't have it, and a Kentucky company who's been unwilling to and refusing to disclose it. And so it remains to be seen how this is going to play out. But at some point in time, one would think that the court is going to have to obtain jurisdiction over this Kentucky company in order that the Kentucky company be compelled to turn over the source code.
Wow. That is amazing. I saw that and said, that's amazing how trade secrets can impact the court system in a different way. Not the traditional sense like we talked earlier about, say, Coke or Kentucky Fried Chicken. Now, if I have a business and I believe I have a trade secret, what do I need to do to keep it and protect it? What should I keep in mind?
Under the statute and under prevailing Minnesota law, trade secrets must be the subject of reasonable efforts in maintaining secrecy. Now, reasonable efforts has been interpreted to mean that the company must do enough such that its employees know that the information they have access to is confidential, is highly proprietary, and is a trade secret. And, of course, in litigation, we oftentimes see disputes arising out of whether or not the information was, in fact, the subject of reasonable efforts to maintain secrecy. What can an employer do? Well, a few practical examples. If we're talking about actual written information, we talked about the vault in which the KFC recipe is maintained. That would be an example, keeping a hard copy of a paper document under lock and key, of maintaining a reasonable efforts at maintaining secrecy. What else can – but of course, there's going to be situations where that information needs to be disclosed to employees in order that the employees may effectively do their job. So what then? Well, number one, go by the stamp which says confidential or company confidential or highly proprietary, and stamp those documents so that anyone taking a look at them knows that these are something that secrecy should be maintained. When appropriate, keep it under lock and key. Restrict physical access. Don't distribute copies at a meeting unless someone needs to have them. The long and the short of it is always keep and maintain efforts at informing employees of the importance of maintaining secrecy. And this is particularly important when we're talking about employees like salespeople who are going to interact with customers in the marketplace. there's the potential for the exchange of information in that setting. And so it is particularly important that the company educate its employees about rights, responsibilities, obligations, and so forth, so that no one has any misunderstanding about what can or cannot be done with that information.
And people should be aware that there are amazing things that can be done through computer forensics. So if you think that you're getting away with something, you're probably not.
Well, it's a great point. 2 points. Number one, electronically stored information should be password protected. Password should be given only to those persons who have the need to see it. Of course, we're also talking about storing information on computers. Not only do we need to be concerned about internal access, but also external access from the outside. And so a firm would be well advised to speak with an expert in the field of computer security to ensure that appropriate firewalls and other tactics have been taken to ensure secrecy. Also, you bring up computer forensics and investigating misappropriation of trade secret. That is something that we see all the time in litigation, and it is amazing what these computer forensic people can discover about computer usage. When information is stored electronically, it could very well be attached as a file to an email and sent off-site to a personal computer. It could be downloaded or uploaded to a thumb drive or a flash drive that could be inserted into the computer. It could be simply opened and printed into hard copy form. Well, a computer forensic examiner has the tools to determine exactly when that conduct occurred, what occurred, and provides detailed information to an employer, to the court in litigation, in which we can ascertain exactly who did what and when. And so there really is no way of hiding the conduct on a computer, given the capabilities of computer forensics, or I should say that oftentimes there is no way to do so. And it's a chance that the employee probably shouldn't take.
Trade Secrets in the Spotlight today on Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Matt Kostelnik in the studio today. Tom Schroyer has a day off. Next week, it's a best of program on the 4th of July. We'll tell you more about what you can hear 1 week from today on the program. By the way, the phone number, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. That's 651-989-9226 or toll free 1-866-989-9226 if you want to call the program. You can text the studio as well at 81807. That's 81807. Okay, I have a trade secret. I've done everything in my power to protect it, but I believe it's been stolen. A disgruntled employee is left with these secrets. What do I do?
There are a few options available for the employer. Number one, obviously investigate and marshal the evidence. Determine exactly what's happened to the extent that you can. Second, consider what options you have under the law. More often than not, we see an interplay between statutory law, the common law, and contractual law in these situations. And what I mean by that is, of course, statutory law could involve the trade secret. Second, tort law could involve duties and obligations that the employee has to the employer, which may well have been breached in connection with the trade secret misappropriation and whatever other conduct we're talking about in a given situation. If we have an employment agreement in place, we'd be looking at whether or not that employment agreement contains something called a restrictive covenant. Restrictive covenants are also referred to as non-competes or non-solicitations. So to the extent that the situation we see often is that there has been information which has been taken from an employer during employment and to be used by the employee in the context of the new job. And so under a situation like that, we may well see an interplay between all three types of law that I mentioned, that is statutory law, contractual law, and tort law.
And, Matt, I would assume acting quickly is also very important as well, that you want to strike fast. If you believe something key has been stolen, you want to get on it right away.
Well, that's right, Steve. And what the statute allows, as well as common law and in certain instances the contract itself, the employment agreement, if it's available, is for the employer, the aggrieved party, to proceed to court and apply for an injunction. An injunction is emergency relief, which is intended to maintain the status quo that existed before the misappropriation occurred. And one of the arguments, the litigant must satisfy something called the Dahlberg factors. And one of those factors has to do with irreparable harm. And to the extent that an employer is not acting quickly, it is circumstantial evidence that perhaps the harm is not irreparable. Otherwise, of course, the employer would have acted quickly and proceeded into court and applied for an injunction right away. And so it is incredibly important, not to mention as a practical matter, of course, we're talking about information which, when in the marketplace, could be turned over to other persons, other businesses, could become widespread and disclosed. And now all of a sudden we're talking about a waiver of trade secret protection because the information is already known in the marketplace. And so not only should the employer proceed quickly because of the legal ramifications, but also as a practical matter, it's in the employer's best interest to proceed quickly.
We'll come back, talk a little bit about the employee side, the employee that leaves and is accused. We'll touch on that a little bit. Matt Kostelnik in studio. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Today, trade secrets in the spotlight. Stay tuned.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Here comes a judge. Did you know there are presently 19 federal judges assigned in Minnesota and 62 state court judges in Hennepin County?
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
It is Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Barnett each and every Saturday at noon. Next Saturday, a best of program. USERRA in the spotlight, the Uniformed Services Employment and Reemployment Rights Acts. Marcy Frost joined us on the program about a year ago, and we feel like it's appropriate for the 4th of July for a best of Minnesota Law. Once again, USERRA in the spotlight, the Uniformed Services Employment and Reemployment Rights Acts. That is coming up next week on Minnesota Law. Matt Kostelnik joining us in studio. Trade secrets, we talked about the flip side for a business that feels like they have been wrong, that one of their trade secrets has left the building, so to speak. What about the former employee that's accused of wrongdoing in that case? I'm sure that's a very serious matter.
Well, it is, and the employee, what we typically see is a former employer suing employee and also the employee's new company on a theory of what's called vicarious liability. And so in that context, in terms of the employee's obligations, it depends upon the situation that the employee finds himself or herself in. Is there an employment agreement, a non-compete, a non-solicitation, confidentiality clause, policy manuals, policy statements, and so forth, that would provide the employer with a contractual right against the employee? If not, and we're talking solely about trade secret protection, the employee is still bound under Minnesota law, under the statute, to abide by the trade secret statute, and that is not misappropriate or disclose that trade secret. So it puts the employee on stronger footing if the employee does not have an employment agreement, in which case the employer does not have the contractual grounds for a lawsuit. However, the employer and the employee may still argue about the tort claims, common law breach of duty of loyalty, as well as the trade secret statute. Now, if we're talking about trade secrets in the context of an employee making the jump to a new employer who does exactly the same thing as the former employer, the employee is going to be doing the same thing, What the former employer is going to argue is that there's a threat of inevitable disclosure, and under the trade secret statute, the employer is still going to apply for an injunction to prevent the employee from taking that new job. And the new employee is going to defend by saying, I didn't take anything. I've got this knowledge in my head, but I'm not going to disclose it. And it becomes a really tough case, and it's going to be a highly contentious litigated case in terms of whether or not or who's going to prevail. Is an injunction going to issue? And I guess what we're seeing in the economic climate is we are seeing more and more of this litigation. But at the same time, the judges who are going to be hearing these cases are going to come at it from different perspectives. And it wouldn't be surprising for a judge to say, you know what, this economy is hard enough without having to deal with the lawsuit in which somebody is trying to prevent another person from earning a living. In Minnesota, as a matter of public policy, we favor competition. Non-compete agreements and employment agreements only until recent times were not well accepted under the law. And so in a close case, it would not be surprising for the courts to give the benefit of the doubt to the employee and allow the employee to work and earn a living. Perhaps there could be some agreed upon restrictions, but in actuality, it's really going to vary. It's going to be case by case. It's going to be specific based upon the facts of a given case. And it's really what makes our job fun is that we're constantly applying it in the early stages of litigation. Success or failure is going to be based upon the facts of a given case. And so and we talked about employer-employee efforts and so forth. I mean, on both sides, there needs to be a marshaling of evidence, because if it's going to proceed to litigation, the case is going to be won or lost at that early stage based upon the facts of a given case.
All right, Matt. Well, fascinating stuff. Once again, trade secrets in the spotlight. Always a pleasure, Matt. Thanks again for coming in today.
Yeah, thanks, Steve.
Matt Kostelnik from Moss & Barnett. Minnesota Law, presented by Moss & Barnett each and every Saturday at noon here on News Radio 830 WCCO. Next week, 4th of July, Best Of program, USERRA, the Uniform Services Employment and Reemployment Rights Act. That's coming up next week. Marcy Frost, Tom Schroyer, hosted that program about a year ago. Fascinating and very appropriate for the 4th of July here on Minnesota Law.